From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. On Thursday, President Bush will deliver an inaugural address, and he will contribute to a relatively rare genre, the second inaugural. A president who is re-elected must reintroduce his presidency, restate his vision of leadership, or revise it. No one did it so famously as Abraham Lincoln, whose words of March 4, 1865, read here by actor Roger Mueller, remain among the most quotable of our most eloquent president.
With malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right, as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations.
That, of course, was during the waning days of the Civil War. The complete text and reading of Lincoln's second inaugural can be found in Michael Waldman's book, My Fellow Americans, The Most Important Speeches of America's Presidents from George Washington to George W. Bush. Michael Waldman was chief White House speechwriter for Bill Clinton, and he joins us from New York. Welcome to the program.
My pleasure.
Is there a special challenge facing a president when he delivers a second inaugural address?
Second inaugurals are very hard. It's almost like a sequel. It's hard to make the sequel as good as the original movie. Inaugural addresses generally are not really often that great as speeches. They tend as a group toward high school civics oration levels of profundity. The ones that we remember are those that deal with a crisis. In Lincoln's case, that second inaugural is considered one of the greatest documents in American history. He was not just putting out pretty words there, but articulating a very dramatic policy on Reconstruction and on reconciliation between the North and the South.
You might say the only other second inaugural you've mentioned as one that stands the test of time was given by Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1937. He had just been elected to his second term. He had taken office combating the Great Depression, and he spoke in that speech of how many people in America remained poor.
I see one third of a nation ill housed, ill clad, ill nourished. But it is not in despair that I paint that picture for you. I paint it for you in hope, because the nation, seeing and understanding the injustice of it, proposes to paint it out.
FDR using the imagery of painting and describing the number of people who lived in poverty in the mid-1930s.
That's such a powerful speech because he's just won a resounding victory. And it's often the case that politicians will want to say, see, the glass is half full or two-thirds full. And there he's saying, no, let's still focus on the challenge that exists. That speech also has the paradox, really, of second inaugurals because as eloquent as it was, as well received as it was, as powerful as it was the beginning of basically a dud of a second term. Roosevelt's first initiative out of the gate after that speech was the court packing plan.
Packing the court, expanding the Supreme Court to get more favorable justices on it.
It consumed most of 1937, and he didn't achieve all that much in domestic policy for the rest of that term.
Just as FDR had been reelected by a landslide in 1936, Richard Nixon was reelected by a landslide in 1972. And on January 20th, 1973, he gave a second inaugural, which included this.
Let us be proud that by our bold new initiatives, by our steadfastness for peace with honor, we have made a breakthrough toward creating in the world what the world has not known before, a structure of peace that can last, not merely for our time, but for generations to come.
A structure of peace that will last for generations to come.
That's the kind of grandiloquence of high-flown oratory that you get in inaugural addresses, and especially in second inaugural addresses, and they don't always last the test of time. Of course, when Nixon spoke, the Vietnam War was still going on, but it was winding down. Roosevelt spoke during World War II, but it was winding down. President Bush's inaugural is the first one that will be happening during wartime when we don't know when the war is going to end, when we don't know when the troops will be coming home. That's an unusual challenge for him. And as eloquent, as powerful as these inaugural speeches can be, they get their force not so much from the words, but from the policies behind them. And President Bush certainly has an agenda in domestic policy, in foreign policy. So he actually has the big goals. You know, whether they're the right goals or the wrong goals for the country will be determined over the months to come. He's got the raw material for potentially for a strong speech.
Nixon's speech seems to have been about as long as FDR's second inaugural, which was nearly 20 minutes. Lincoln's speech was much, much shorter than that. What's the pressure, you think, on a president when he gives his inaugural address to find the soul of wit in brevity or to hold the nation's attention for a near half hour?
When you're president, you know that people are going to listen to you. And they're certainly going to listen to you during your inaugural, no matter what. You don't need to hold the stage just in the hope that people will pay attention. If you can summon up powerful policies, and if you can do it in a way that calls on the best in American history and that links the challenge of today in some way to the ideals that animate the country and have over its history, you can get on and off the stage pretty quickly.
Because when we heard Abraham Lincoln, that was when inaugurations were held in March, and there was at least a good chance of spring weather. Now it is January 20th. There's a lot of pressure on a president to be brief just because it's cold.
That's true, although the most dramatic inaugural in some ways did take place in March when President William Henry Harrison got up. He was old. He wanted to show that he could handle the job, and he talked at great length and caught pneumonia and died about a month later. That's probably the outer limit of bad examples for presidents as they prepare for their inaugural.
And having run on the slogan Tippecanoe and Tyler too, it was Tyler in pretty short order.
That's how we can always remember who followed him.
Michael Waldman, who's the author of My Fellow Americans, The Most Important Speeches of American Presidents from George Washington to George W. Bush. You can read and hear some of those speeches at our website, npr.org.